So, of course, part of being a rabbi is having people come to ask you unanswerable questions. And when someone makes an appointment to come and talk, I never know, unless they let me know in advance, what it is exactly they are interested in talking about. And a few weeks ago, a young woman whom I didn't know called and made an appointment to come and see me, and she sat down and she looked at me and she said, "What's wrong with men anyway?" I tried delicately to point out to her that I was actually a member of the species to which she was referring, and therefore maybe not the best person to answer the question, but I thought I would take a stab at it, and I think I'll take a stab at it this morning. Not what's wrong, but perhaps what's ideal toward what should men strive, since this is, after all, Men's Club Shabbat, and Rabbut Mukhtarzadeh, to whom we owe thanks for arranging this, which is a tremendous labor, called me several weeks ago and he said, "What's the topic of your sermon going to be? Because I want to put it in the program." Well, I would love to tell you that I know months in advance what I'm going to speak about, but I figured it was safe. I would just say I'm going to talk about what it is to be a man, because that, I figured, would still be relevant a month later. I'm going to get to what I think this young woman was talking about when she said, "What's wrong with men anyway?" in a minute. But I want to start with Moses, because Moses presents a model not of what's wrong with men, although in some ways he does that as well, but that towards which a man should strive. Because we really know very little about why God chooses Moses, but we have a few incidents from his life that at least point us in an important direction. The first is when Moses walks out of the castle, out of the palace, out of Pharaoh's realm. The first thing he does is he saves an Israelite slave who's being beaten by an Egyptian slave master. Shortly after that, he sees two Israelite slaves who are quarreling with each other, and he breaks up their fight. At which point one of them says, "Are you going to kill one of us like you did with the Egyptian slave master?" And Moses, knowing that his life was at risk, escapes to Midian. When he escapes to Midian, he sees there shepherds who are preventing others, including his future wife, although he doesn't know that at the time, from watering their flocks, so he saves them as well. And the rabbis point out that this teaches you something about Moses' character. First, he intervenes in a fight between an Egyptian and a Jew. Then he intervenes in a fight between two Jews. And then he intervenes in a fight between two non-Jews, two Midianites. So Moses understands that the circle of a human being's concern begins with those to whom he or she is closest, your family, your community, your people. And that's legitimate and to be expected, and it's even good. It's a problem, and this goes towards one of the things that may be wrong, when people care much more what happens outside of their personal life than they do with what happens inside their personal life. People who, say, live for the company, but not for their family. Or, as the son of the great French revolutionary Mirabeau said, Mirabeau was known as the friend of man. He said, "The friend of man was friend to neither wife nor child." It was better to be somebody in his public life than his personal life. Well, Moses intervening in the fight between two Jews shows how deeply he cares about what happens at home. But he doesn't only care about that. He also cares about the interactions between his community and the community outside, between Jews and non-Jews. That's why he intervenes in the fight between a Jew and a non-Jew, and his circle of concern doesn't end there. It expands beyond himself to the world. You always get this dichotomy, this split between Jews who seem to care only for Jews, or people who seem to care only for their family, and people who seem to care only for those outside their own community. Moses illustrates that both are important, and both, I would say, are part of the definition of what it is to be a man. You have to care about people close to you, and then in expanding circles, the wave of your concern should roll through the world. And nothing human, as the poet Donne once said, should be alien to you, because you are part of mankind. So that's the Moses model on one level. But of course, I don't think that when I was asked this question, that she was looking for a précis of the life of Moses. And so I want to go to another model, a different model, and this is illustrated by what we read this morning, which is Shir HaShirim. Shir HaShirim, actually, according to one modern scholar at least, was written by a woman. But whether it was written by a woman or a man, it illustrates something central about what it means to be a man. Because Shir HaShirim is a love poem, which means that it's filled with passion. It's filled with passion for an individual who is right in front of the poet. Now, everybody, I mean, it's true that not everybody is the same, and as Emerson said, we all boil at different degrees. That is, some people are quicker to passion, and some people have a longer road. But every human being has the potential for passion. Sometimes it takes so long that Abraham and Sarah are married for decades before he turns to her, right before they're about to enter Egypt, and he says, "You know, you're a beautiful woman." And although Sarah's part of that dialogue is not recorded, you can imagine that she said, "Well, that only took 35 years. But nonetheless, thank you for the compliment." And yet, the reality is that that moment, that is the instinct for passion that is central to being a man. You see it in Jacob. Remember, Jacob has to work for 7 years to marry Rachel, and yet, says the Torah, it seemed to him but a few days. Now, passions ebb and flow. Part of the reality of life is that passions settle into the problems and the opportunities and the necessities of living a life. But at first, as we talked about last Shabbat, at first there has to be a spark. And that's why the rabbis put Shir HaShirim into the Torah. Not only because they understood it as an analogy between Israel and God, but they understood it as a central part of what it means to be a human being. That you have to have poetry in your soul as well as prose. That you have to be able to look at somebody and feel the rush of wonder and magic and mystery and love that is embodied in the words Aza Kamavet, that love is as strong as death. In other words, that it is the other force that overwhelms everything in this world. That's why it is the motto of Shir HaShirim, Ani LeDodi VeDodi Li, that we take for the wedding vow. I am my beloved's, my beloved is mine. That too is part of being a man. That you can't sacrifice interpersonal passion for public success. That both of them, at different times, in different measures, in different ways, are the making of a successful life. And that's why Shir HaShirim is considered a love song between God and Israel. Because every human being has implanted that possibility in his or her soul, that they can feel that poetry and that passion, not only for another person, but for life and for God. That opening your eyes in the morning ought to be an excitement and an adventure and a wonder. Modeh ani lefanecha. You say, thank you, God, shehechazarta bi nishmatim, who has returned my soul to me. In other words, we should live in gratitude for ourselves and for others. And if that seems an unusual model for what it is to be a man, it's only because we have lost some of this traditional understanding. If you think about it, as I spoke about last night in Friday Night Live, we Jews love to open doors to things you cannot see. We opened the door for Elijah. We opened the door for the Shabbat. We opened the door for angels. And that's because we understand that redemption and miracle and angelic beauty begins inside of us. That God implanted that spark, and it is the nurturing of the spark of the human soul and fanning it into a flame that ought to define a successful life in this world. Hasne enenu ukal. Moses realizes at the beginning of his journey, he comes to a bush, and the bush is on fire, but it is not consumed. In other words, there's passion, but it's passion that can last. And Moses feels it again and again in his travels through the desert with his family and his people. So if you ask me, really, what's wrong with men? I'll tell you that the specific problems, the differences between men and women, about which I've spoken before and no doubt will again, they're interesting and worthwhile, but really it's a question of what is it that dims and dulls and coarsens and darkens the awareness and the appreciation, not of men, but of human beings? What is it that allows us to overlook instead of to look? What is it that allows us to take for granted instead of to wonder? The blessing we said before was the Shehechianu, the blessing that thanks God for allowing us to reach this moment. But the truth is, even though we save that for special moments, it's the blessing for every moment of every day. And the last part, the final part of being a man, or a human being, is embodied in the Haftarah we read today. It's that beautiful Haftarah where Ezekiel, Yechezkel, summons the bones of Israel and they are resurrected. And it is usually taken as an analogy for national resurrection. That is, Israel, which has been destroyed, will rise again, as we have seen, in fact, in our own time. But I want to suggest to you that it is also a personal analogy. That as long as there is life, there is the opportunity to begin again, to renew, to be resurrected, to reconnect, to meet again, to meet for the first time. That's the potential that God gives us, never to be done. And that's why Pesach comes each year, the renewal of the cycle. It is spring again. And the Talmud tells us that behind every blade of grass in this world, there is an angel. And it whispers one word to the blade of grass. You know what it whispers according to the Talmud? Grow. So if God puts an angel behind every blade of grass, surely God puts an angel behind every soul, whispering one word to all of us. Men and women alike, grow. And if you ask me what is wrong with some people, it is just that they're not listening to the angel. So remind them, encourage them to listen. Hopefully we will listen ourselves. And this year, this new year, this spring year, will be a year of closeness, a year of connection, a year of renewal, and a time of growth. Shabbat Shalom.